He was so familiar with Whip that he almost didn't have to think while he was doing it. He just made the motion, and then the toothless Heavy was lying on the ground, screaming through a bloody, ravaged mouth. He hit the lever, and the straps tugged against his forearm as Whip's head came hurtling back to Gregor with a soft, rabid zip. His arm shook as it connected with the shaft, but his attention was fixed on the thug on his right, a short, pockmarked man with a black-bladed machete, who looked down at his fallen comrade, looked up at Gregor, and screamed and sprinted at him. Gregor, still marching down the alley, flicked Whip forward again, aiming for the man's legs. The head of the truncheon connected soundly with his kneecap, and the man fell to the ground, howling in pain. Gregor retracted Whip, and as he passed him, he brought the truncheon down sharply on the man's forearm, either bruising or breaking his radius or ulna, which made him howl quite a bit louder. There were two left, one on each side of the taverna door. One had the espringle, though he looked shocked when he pulled the trigger and nothing happened, ignorant, of course, that he'd prepared it wrong. Before he could do anything else, Gregor hurled Whip forward, and the dense, heavy head of the weapon went crashing into the guard's right hand, smashing his fingers. He dropped the weapon, cursing and screaming. This left the fourth and final guard, who had picked up a battered steel shield and a small spear. The guard crouched low and advanced on Gregor down the alley, hiding almost all of his body behind the shield. Served in the wars, Gregor thought. He'd had training, certainly, but not enough. Gregor flicked Whip out again, and the head of the truncheon sailed over the guard's head, landing behind him, and brought the metal cable down with it. The cable fell over the top of the guard's shield, which made the man pause, until Gregor pressed the lever to retract it. The head of the truncheon hurtled back with its usual enthusiastic zip, cracking into the guard's shoulder along the way, which sent him tumbling forward, sprawling face down in the alley. He groaned as he looked up at Gregor, who walked up and kicked the guard in the face. Gregor Dandolo picked up the shield. The guard with the espringle tossed away his weapon and pulled out a stiletto with his good hand. He assumed a fighting position, crouching low. Then he seemed to reconsider his position and turned and ran away. Gregor watched him go. Then, with the air of someone on a quick errand, Gregor walked up the stairs of the taverna, lifted his shield, brushed aside the drape, and waged war on the perch and lark. It helped that there were only five guards. It helped more that they hadn't moved since he'd left, so he knew exactly where they would be. It helped even more that it was dark and loud, and Whip's attack was fairly quiet. So Gregor took down two of his opponents before anyone in the room even understood what was happening. When the second guard hit the floor, blood streaming from his nose and mouth, the whole taverna erupted into chaos. Gregor lowered his shield, which made him an obvious target, and skirted the edges of the screaming, drunken crowd until he came up on the flank of a guard with a spear. The guard saw him at the last minute, eyes widening. He thrust his spear forward, but Gregor had already raised his shield, deflecting the blow. Then he thrust Whip forward, smashing in the man's jaw. The man crumpled to the ground. Two left. The guard with the Dowlo axe and one with an espringle. And this latter one, he could tell, had been trained properly with the weapon. Which was bad. Gregor raised the shield and sought cover behind a table just as a bolt slammed into his shield. The point of the bolt actually pierced the damn thing, penetrating 3 inches through. Any more and it would have almost certainly punched through Gregor's neck. Muttering discontentedly, Gregor strafed to the right and flung Whip forward. He missed his target, but the head of the truncheon smashed through the wall just over the guard's shoulder, which sent the man diving for cover behind the bar. The two of them stayed low, waiting for the screaming crowd to evacuate. Gregor glanced up and saw a shelf of bottles above the bar, and above that, a flickering oil lamp. He estimated the distance and flicked Whip forward twice, once to smash the bottles of alcohol, and again to shatter the oil lamp. Hot, burning oil rained down, which quickly set the pools of alcohol alight. There was a shriek, and the guard with the espringle, Kane, sprinting out from behind the bar, slapping at his smoking clothes. He never even saw Whip hurtling toward his face. Once the man was down, Gregor crouched low and looked around. Antonin was still there, cowering in the back, but the guard with the Dowlow axe was nowhere to be seen. Gregor felt footsteps through the floorboards on his right. Without thinking, he turned and raised his shield. There was a loud scream, and then his shield arm lit up with pain. It had been a long time since he'd been hit with a Dowlow axe, and he found he didn't enjoy it any more now than he had back during the wars. Gregor rolled out from the bar and raised his shield again, just in time to catch another blow from the guard with the axe. His whole arm went numb with the strike, and he heard a snap, but it turned out to be the wooden slats under his feet, which could hardly bear the pressure. Which gave Gregor an idea. Keeping his shield up, he backed away. The guard with the axe charged at him, but before he could bring the axe down, Gregor flicked Whip at the slats at his feet. The head of the truncheon punched through the wooden slats like they were water reeds. Before the guard could even realize what had happened, he'd put his foot in the gaping hole that Whip had created. Then he slipped, crashed down, and as he did, the entire floor collapsed underneath him. Gregor leapt back as the wooden slats gave way. When the creaking stopped, he retracted Whip and peeked over the edge of the hole, wrinkling his nose. He couldn't see the guard in the muddy darkness below, but he knew that the taverna latrines emptied into the filthy space under the building. Gregor took stock of the situation. The taverna was now mostly empty except for the moaning guards and the large fat man trying to hide behind a chair. Gregor grinned, stood up straight, and marched over. "Antonin Genove!" he called. Antonin shrieked in terror as Gregor approached. "How did you like my experiment?" Gregor asked. "You said that might makes right in the commons." He ripped the chair away, and Antonin quailed in the corner. "But might is so often illusory, isn't it?"
"I'll tell you anything you want," shrieked Antonin. "Anything!" "I want the thief," said Gregor.
Ask
Sark,"
said Antonin.
"Who?" "An independent, former canal man. He's a fence. He sets up jobs, and I'm almost positive he did the waterfront."
"And why would that be?" asked Gregor.
"Because only a damned canal man would think of trying to use a damned sailing rig."
Gregor nodded.
"I see. So, this Sark, where would he reside?" "The Greens, Salvo Building, third floor."
"Greens," said Gregor quietly. "Salvo, third floor, Sark."
Right,
said Antonin. Face quivering, he cringed and looked up at Gregor.
"So, will you let me go?"
"I was always going to let you go, Antonin," said Gregor, sheathing Whip. "This is Tavon. We have no prisons, no courts, and I am not going to kill you. I try hard not to do that anymore."
Antonin sighed with relief. "But," said Gregor, clenching a fist and cracking his knuckles,
"I do not like you. I do not like what you do here, Antonin, and I will show you how much I dislike it, using the only language men like you understand."
His eyes shot wide.
"No, no!"
Gregor raised his fist.
"Yes."
Gregor turned, shaking his hand, and walked back to the rickety stalls with the drapes. He pulled them aside, one by one. 4 girls, 2 boys. None of them older than 17.
"Come on, then,"
said Gregor gently to them.
"Come on."
He led the children down the hallway, across the battered, broken taverna, and down the stairs to the alley, where the 3 guards were still whimpering. The children watched as Gregor searched the body of the unconscious, toothless guard for his 50 devots.
"Now what?"
asked a boy.
"You have nowhere else to go, I assume,"
said Gregor. The line of children stared at him. This question, clearly, was preposterous. He wondered what to do. He wished there were some charity or home he could send them to. But the commons, of course, had no such thing. He nodded and pulled out his satchel.
"Here. This is 500 devats. You lot could put this to far better use than Antonin ever could. If we divided evenly, we could..."
But he never finished, because then one of the youngest girls snatched the satchel out of his hand and ran for it. In the blink of an eye, all the other children were chasing her, screaming threats.
"Pietra, if you think you're keeping all that, we'll cut your damn throat! Try and catch me, you worthless stripers!"
the girl howled back. Gregor watched, stunned, as the children ran away. He started after them, about to shout at them to stop, when he remembered he had other things to do tonight. He sighed deeply, listened to the fading sounds of these bickering children, so monstrously abused. He liked to imagine he was accustomed to such horrors, but sometimes the futility of it all overwhelmed him.
"No matter how I try, Tavon remains Tavon."
Then he walked down the alley to where he'd hung up his water watch sash. He unfolded it, then slid it back over his head. As he adjusted it, he noticed a splotch of blood on his shoulder. Frowning, he licked a finger and rubbed it clean. His shield arm hurt. A lot. And it was likely he'd made a good deal of enemies tonight. But it was wisest to move before word could spread.
"Now," thought Gregor, "on to this Sark."
Chapter 8. Sanchia sat on her building's rooftop and stared out at the crooked foundry side streets below. She came up here only occasionally, usually to make sure she wasn't being watched. And tonight, she needed to be sure, since tonight was her night to meet Sark at the fishery and tell him they needed to get the hell out of Tavon. She wondered how she'd explain Clef to him. Despite all the scrappers had told her, she still didn't know much about him, about what he really was or could do or why. And Clef had not spoken to her since that night. She almost wondered if she'd imagined their conversations. She looked out at the city. All of Tavon was smeared with starlit smoke and steam, a ghostly cityscape sinking into the fog. The huge white Campo walls surfaced among the ramble of the commons, like the bones of a beached whale. Behind them stood the towers of the Campos, which glowed with soft, colorful luminescence. Among them was the Michiel clock tower, its face a bright, cheery pink. And beyond that was the mountain of the Candianos, the biggest structure in all of Tavon, a huge dome that reminded her of a fat, swollen tick, sitting in the center of the Candiano Campo. She felt lonely and small. Sanchia had always been alone. But feeling lonely was different from just being alone.
"Kid?"
Sanchia sat up. "Clef, you're talking again?"
"Yeah, obviously."
He sounded sullen. "What happened to you? Where did you go?"
"I've always been right here. I've just been thinking."
"Thinking?"
"Yeah. About what those people said about me being a..."
"A tool of the Hierophants."
"Yeah, that."
There was a pause.
Can I ask you something, kid?
Yes.
Wine tastes sweet, right?
Huh?
Wine. It tastes sharp and yet sweet on your tongue, doesn't it?
I guess I don't really drink.
It tastes like that. I'm sure it does. I remember that sensation. That feeling of cool wine on a hot day.
Really? How?
I don't know. How can I know that? How can I remember that if I'm just a key, and more a key that was made to break things open? To break open scrivings and locks and doors. I mean, it's not just the idea of being a tool. It's the idea of being a tool and not knowing it. Of having things built into you by someone else, things you can't resist obeying or doing. Like when you put me in that lock and that door. I just started. Instantly, and it felt good. It felt so good, kid.
I could tell. Do you remember anything more about being, I don't know, some artifact?
No, nothing. I just have the dark and nothing else. But it bothers me.
They sat in silence.
I'm dangerous for you, aren't I?
He said quietly. Well, my client either wants to destroy you or take you apart and use what they discover to destroy everybody else. And I'm willing to bet they want to kill everyone who knows about you, which includes me. So that's a yes.
Shit. But tonight's when you make a run for it, right?
Yeah. I meet Sark in 2 hours. Then I either convince him to jump on a ship with me, or I beat him into submission and drag him to the piers. I'd rather have him cooperate. Sark has all kinds of forged documents that can get us out of T'Vaan fast. But one way or another, you and I are gone. To where, I don't know yet. But gone.
Well,
Clef sighed.
I always did like the idea of an ocean voyage.
She moved from Foundry Side to Old Ditch, and then on to the Greens, which earned its name due to a curious fungus that merrily feasted on all the wood in this neighborhood, turning it a dull lime color. The Greens ran along the Anifesto, one of the main shipping channels, and the area had once been the thriving heart of T'Vaan's fishing industry. But then the merchant houses had built up a surplus of scribed ships for the wars, and they'd started to use them to fish instead, which drove everyone else out of business, since they were about 100 times more efficient. The Greens looked a lot like Foundry Side. Lots of rookeries, lots of low-slung slums and shops. But rather than being constrained by the Campo walls, all the housing came to a sharp stop at the decaying industrial ramble running beside the channel. Sanchia walked along the Anifesto, eyeing the dark, decrepit fisheries ahead. She kept looking to her left, toward the lanes of the Greens. This area was a lot quieter than Foundry Side, but she took no chances. Every time she spied someone, she stopped and watched their movements, sensitive to any suggestion that they might be there looking for her, and she didn't move on until satisfied. She was anxious because she had Clef, of course, and knew all the threats that invited. But she also had her life savings in the pack on her back. 3,000 duvats, almost entirely in coinage. She'd need every penny of it to get out of T'Vaan, provided she even got that far. And though she carried her usual thieving kit, this offered little in the way of defense beyond her stiletto. It would be darkly funny if, after all she'd been through, she wound up getting mugged in the Greens by the luckiest street urchin of all time. Once she got close enough, she took the back way to the fishery, crawling across crumbling stone foundations and rusting pipes, until she approached it from a narrow, shadowy passage. Probably no one thought she'd approach from this angle, including Sark. The fishery was a 2-story moldy stone structure, a place so rotted and decayed, it was hard to tell its original purpose anymore. Sark was waiting on the second floor, she knew, and the first floor would be riddled with traps. His usual insurance. She looked at the dark windows, thinking, how in hell am I going to convince Sark to run?
This place is a shithole, said Clef.
Yeah, but it's our shithole. Me and Sark have done a lot of business here. It's as safe as we're going to get. She started toward it, feeling somewhat comfortable for the first time that night. She silently crept around the corner, then past the big iron doors, which she knew she shouldn't use, since Sark had trapped them, and slipped through a broken window. She landed softly, took off her gloves, and touched her bare hands to the stone floor and the wall beside her. Bones, blood, and viscera flooded her mind. The fishery had been the site of so much fish gutting that it almost always bowled her over every time. All the accumulated sensations of so much gore. There were still piles of fish bones here and there throughout the first floor, delicate tangles of tiny, translucent skeletons, and the scent still lingered, of course. Sanchia concentrated, and soon the traps lit up in her mind like fireworks. Three tripwires running across the room to three hidden espringles that were almost certainly loaded up with flechettes. Paper packets of razor blades that would turn into a lethal cloud when fired. She sighed in relief.
Good.
All these traps make you feel better? Said Clef.
Yes, because they mean Sark's here. So he must be alive and safe.
You have a weird relationship with your colleagues. I'll just say that.
She moved forward to delicately step over the first tripwire. Then she stopped. She thought for a moment and peered throughout the darkness of the room. She thought she could spy the tripwires in the dim light, tiny dark filaments stretching across the shadows. One, she counted. Two, three. She frowned. Then she knelt to touch the floor and wall again with her bare hands.
Something wrong?
Asked Clef.
Yes, said Sanchia.
She waited until her talents confirmed it once more.
There are three tripwires.
So?
Sark always uses four traps, not three.
Oh, maybe he forgot one?
She didn't answer. She looked around the first floor again. It was dark, but she couldn't see anything unusual. She looked out the windows at the building fronts beyond. No movement. Nothing strange. She cocked her head and listened. She could hear the lapping of waves, the sigh of the wind, the creaking and crackling as the building flexed in the breeze. But nothing else.
Perhaps he's forgotten it, she thought. Perhaps he overlooked it, just this one time.
But that was not like Sark. After his torture at the hands of the Morsinis, he'd become wildly paranoid and cautious. It was not in his nature to forget a safeguard. She looked around again, just to be sure.
Then she spied something. Was that a glint of metal there in the wooden beam across the room?
She narrowed her eyes and thought it was.
A flechette? Buried there in the wood?
She stared at it and felt her heart beating faster. She knelt again and touched her hands to the floor for a third time. Again, the stone told her of bones and blood and viscera, as they always did. Yet now she focused to find out. Was any of that blood new? And she found it was. There was a big splotch of new blood just a few feet from her. It was almost impossible to see with the naked eye, since its stain blended in with the much older, larger stain of ancient fish blood. And her talents hadn't initially spotted it, as it had been lost in the larger memory of so much gore. She took her hands away as her scar began to throb. She felt cold sweat prickling across her back and belly. She turned again to the windows, staring out at the streets. Still nothing.
Kid? Said Clef. You know how I could tell you had a scribed plate in your head? How I just sensed it?
Why?
Well, I figured I'd let you know that I'm sensing 3 scribed rigs upstairs.
She felt faint. What?
Yeah, right above us. And they're moving, like someone's carrying them and walking around. They just walked overhead.
Sanchia slowly lifted her eyes to stare at the ceiling. She took a deep breath and slowed her thoughts.
It was obvious what was happening now.
The question was what to do next. What resources do I have? What tools are available?
Not much, she knew.
All she had was a stiletto. But she looked around, thinking. She silently crept along one tripwire and found its a springle hidden in the corner. Yet it was unloaded. Normally, it would have had a flechette pack sitting in its pocket, ready to be hurled forward. But now it was gone. Just a cocked a springle with nothing to shoot. She grimaced. I guess I shouldn't be surprised. She silently dismantled the trap and slung the springle across her back.
What are you doing? Clef asked.
Sark's dead, she said. She crept along a second tripwire and started disarming it, but she didn't completely dismantle it.
What?
Said Clef, astonished. Sark is dead and this is a trap. She did the same to the third tripwire. Then she set them both up so they ran across the base of the stairs and positioned the springles so that they were pointed right at the stairway.
How do you know?
Because someone set off a tripwire very recently, she said. There's a flechette stuck in the wood over there and a decent amount of fresh blood on the ground. That's why there are 3 tripwires, not 4. My guess is they followed Sark here, waited a bit too long to follow him in, and lost some flesh for it. But they must have got him eventually.
Why are you so sure?
Because Sark doesn't walk around with any scribed armaments, so that's not him up there. They tried to clean up, to put everything just as he'd left it so I wouldn't get spooked and bolt. Though they weren't stupid enough to leave me down here with loaded weapons. They're upstairs waiting for me.
Really?
Yeah.
Why didn't they just shoot you as you approached?
Probably because there's always a chance I didn't have you, and then they'd have a dead girl and no answers. They wanted me to walk upstairs right into their arms. Then they'd torture and kill me. All to find you.
Oh, God. Now what the hell do we do?
We're going to get out of this. Somehow. She looked around. I need a weapon, she thought. Or a distraction, anything. But 1 stiletto and 3 springles with no ammunition didn't get her very far. Then she had an idea. Grimacing, for she no longer had any idea how much she'd have to use her talents tonight, she touched her bare hands to the wooden beam above her. Salt water, rot, termites and dust. Then she found it. The crackling old bones of the beams were shot through with iron spikes in a few places, and several of them were quite loose. She quietly paced over to 1 loose nail, took out her stiletto, and waited for the breeze to rise. When it did, and the creaking and groaning of the old building rose with it, she gently pried the nail out of the soft wood. She held it in her hands, letting it spill into her thoughts, iron and rust and slow corruption. It was big, about 4 or 5 inches long, and about a pound in weight. Not aerodynamic, she thought, but it wouldn't need to be, over short distances. She pocketed it, then pried out 2 more nails and carefully, carefully, placed them in the pockets of the 2 springles pointed at the stairwell door. Maybe this will kill, she thought. Or disable, or something. I just need to slow them down. Again, she looked at the street outside. Still no movement. But that didn't necessarily mean much. These people were prepared. Clef? She asked.
Yeah?
Can you tell me where they are?
I can tell you where their rigs are, and if they're carrying the rigs, that's where they'll be, too. What are you going to do?
Try to survive. What are these rigs? Asked Sanchia. What do they do?
They convince something that it's been falling, or they will when a certain action is performed.
Huh?
It's not like I can see the device,
said Clef.
I can only tell you what the scrivings do, and for these, someone does something that activates them, pulls a lever or something. Then the scrivings convince, some other thing, that it's been falling through the air for thousands and thousands of feet, even if it's actually been sitting still. In other words, they make the thing go really, really, really fast, all of a sudden, in a perfectly straight line.
Sanchia listened to this closely.
Shit.
What?
Because it sounds like they're carrying scribed espringles.
They shoot bolts that go very far, very fast. Some of the more advanced ones can punch through stone walls.
Wow. I don't think these do that.
You don't think? I'm going to need you to be more certain than that.
I'm like maybe 80% sure they don't.
She took her a springle and huddled at the window at the back, but did not exit yet. What are they doing up there?
I think patrolling, mostly, said Clef. Walking in circles from window to window.
She did some quick thinking. She knew there was a window just above this one. Is one of them right above me?
No, but he will be in a bit.
Tell me when he's close.
All right.
She'd reviewed her weapon. The espringle was a clunky, powerful weapon. One of the old models you had to crank 4 or 5 times. And a big rusty iron nail was not the best ammunition to use. She'd have to be close.
He's coming this way, said Clef. He's about 10 feet to your left now, upstairs.
She slipped the iron nail in her espringle's pocket.
He's standing right above you now, said Clef, looking out.
She did her best to convince herself she was going to do what she needed to do. It felt insane. She was no soldier, and she knew it. But she knew there were no other options. Don't miss, she thought. Then she leapt out, raised the espringle at the window above her, and fired. The espringle kicked far harder than she thought it would, and it responded so fast. She thought there'd be some delay when she squeezed the lever on the bottom, some moment before the gears would engage. But at the slightest pressure, the espringle's cord snapped forward like a crocodile trying to snag a fish. There was a dark blur as the iron nail hurtled up at the window, then a wet thud, and the dark window exploded with agonized screams.
I think you got him, said Clef, excited.
Sanchia shrank back up against the wall.
Shut up, Clef.
Someone upstairs cried.
She's here! She's downstairs!
And there was the sound of rapid footfalls. Sanchia hugged the wall, heart beating like mad. The screaming above her kept going on and on. It was an awful sound, and she tried her best to ignore it. Where are they now? She asked.
One scribing is on the ground up there. The guy you shot must have dropped it. There's a second rig at the window at the corner, facing the channel, and the third, I think they're going downstairs.
Are they moving fast?
Yeah.
Good. She waited, not even breathing. The man above kept shrieking and howling in pain. Then there was a harsh snap from somewhere inside the first floor, and the interior lit up with fresh screams. But these tapered off pretty quickly. Probably because those traps had delivered more of a direct hit, which was likely lethal. One left, but it was dark. She'd have to risk it. She dropped the espringle and ran, sprinting through the passageways back to the channel, dodging through all the crumbling buildings and rotting wood, her satchel of devats bouncing on her back. Finally, her feet hit soft mud, and she picked up the pace, frantically running along the water's edge. A voice echoed out from behind her.
She's loose! She's gone! She's gone!
She glanced to her right, up the street, and saw a dozen men pouring out of 2 buildings and sprinting for the channel. It looked like they were fanning out, so maybe they didn't know exactly where she was. Maybe. They were waiting for me, she thought as she ran. It's a whole damn army. They called out a whole damn army from... Then the bolt hit her square in the back, and she fell forward. The first thing she knew was the taste of blood and earth in her mouth. The rest of the world was dark and smeared and indistinct. Noise and screams and distant lights. Clef's voice cut through the blur.
Kid, are you all right? Are
you dead?
Sanchia groaned. Her back hurt like it had been kicked by a horse. Her mouth was thick with blood. She must have bitten her lip as she fell. She stirred, pulled her face from the mud, and sat up, faintly aware of a tinkling sound. She looked at her back and saw her satchel of devats was now little more than a rag. The mud around her was covered in shiny coins. She stared at this, trying to understand what had happened.
"You caught a scribed bolt right in the back," said Clef. "Your big bag of coins stopped it. Holy hell, it's a miracle."
But it didn't feel like a miracle to Sanchia. This glittering metal in the channel mud represented the whole of her life savings.
"Did you mean for that to happen, kid?"
asked Clef. "No," she said wearily. "No, Clef, I did not mean for that to happen." She looked back and saw a dark figure running along the channel toward her. The third man from the fishery building, probably. He must have been the one to fire the shot. He cried,
"She's over there! Over there!"
"Damn it all," said Sanchia. She staggered to her feet and sprinted up the hill and off into the greens. Sanchia ran blindly, thoughtlessly, drunkenly, hurtling through the muddy lanes, her head still spinning from the scribed bolt. Clef chattered madly in her ear as she ran, spitting out directions.
"They're up the street from you, two alleys down. Three more behind you."
She dodged and turned to avoid them, running deeper and deeper into the greens, her chest and legs aching with the effort. She knew she couldn't run much farther. Eventually, she'd stumble or collapse or they'd catch up to her. "Where can I run to?" she thought. "What can I do?" She was close to Foundry Side by now, but that didn't mean much. Foundry Side commoners would sell her out in a heartbeat.
"Use me! Use me!" cried Clef. "Anywhere! Anywhere!"
She realized what he meant. She glanced ahead, picked a building that looked secure and commercial, so hopefully it'd be empty in the middle of the night, ran up to a side door, and stuck Clef into the lock. There was a click. She shoved the door open, darted inside, and locked it behind her. She glanced around. It was dark in the building, but it seemed to be some kind of clothier's warehouse, full of musty rolls of cloth and flittering moths. It also appeared to be empty, thankfully. "Are they outside?" asked Sanchia.
"Two are, moving slow. I don't think they know where you went, or they aren't sure. Where do we go now?"
"Up," said Sanchia. She knelt, touched a hand to the floor, and shut her eyes, letting the building tell her the layout. This was pushing her abilities. Her head felt like it was full of molten iron, but she didn't have a choice. She found the stairs and started climbing until she came to the top window. She opened it, felt the wall outside, let it bleed into her thoughts. Then she slipped out the window and climbed up until she rolled onto the roof. The roof was rickety, old, and not well built, but it was the safest place she'd been yet. It might as well have been paradise. She lay on the roof, chest heaving, and slowly pulled her gloves on. Every part of her hurt. The scribed bolt might not have penetrated her flesh, but it had hit her so hard it felt like she'd strained muscles she didn't even know she had. Still, she knew she couldn't relax now. She crawled to the edge and peered out. She was about three floors up, she saw, and the streets were crawling with heavily armed men, all waving and signaling to one another as they scoured the neighborhoods. It was the sort of thing professional soldiers did, which didn't reassure her. She tried to count their number. 12? 20? A lot more than three, and she'd barely escaped three. Some of the men were being followed by a curious type of rig she'd heard about, but never seen. floating paper lanterns, which had been scribed so they levitated about 10 feet off the ground, glowing softly. They were scribed so they knew to follow specific markers, like a sachet. You put one in your pocket, and the lantern would follow you around like a puppy. She'd heard they used them as streetlights in the inner enclaves of the campos. Sanchia watched as the lanterns bobbed through the air like jellyfish in the deep, following the men and spilling rosy luminescence into the dark corners. She supposed they'd brought them in case she was hiding in the shadows. They were prepared for her, in other words. "Shit," she whispered.
"So we're safe, right?" said Clef. "We just stay here until they leave?"
"Why should they leave? Who's going to make them leave?" She looked at the remnants of her pack. Not only were the coins gone, but so was her thieving kit. It must have fallen out as she ran. "We're basically stuck on a scrumming roof, penniless and unarmed."
"Well, can we sneak away?"
"Sneaking's not as easy as you think." She poked her head up and took stock of her surroundings. The rooftop was bordered by 3 rookery buildings, one on either side and one behind. The 2 on the sides were both too tall and too far away. But the building behind was doable, about the same height as the warehouse, with a stone tile roof. Looks like about a 20-foot jump to the other rooftop.
"Can you make that?"
"That's a big maybe. I'd try it if I had to, but only then." She looked out farther and spied the white campo walls and smokestacks of a campo a few blocks beyond. "The Michiel campo's just a few blocks away. I still have one of their outer wall sachets from the job I took to get you, Clef. Maybe it still works. Probably does."
"Would we be safe from them there?"
That was a good question. "I have no idea, really." She knew that a merchant house had to be behind this. That was the only force that could deploy a small army in the commons just to find her. But which one? None of the assassins she'd seen had worn a house logo tipo, but it would have been supremely stupid for them to do that. All this meant she could go to ground in the Michiel campo only to find out that the men down there were Michiel house guards or someone employed by the Michiels. There was no place she could deem truly safe. Sanchia shut her eyes and rested her forehead against the roof. "Sark, damn you. What in hell have you gotten me mixed up in?" Though she knew she was just as much at fault as he was. He'd been upfront about the job, and she'd still taken it. The money had been too good, and despite all her care and caution, it had made her stupid. But she likely wouldn't have survived this long without Clef. If she hadn't opened the box, she realized, she'd be trussed up like a hog right now, about to be butchered. "Have I told you thank you yet?" she said to Clef.
"Hell, I don't know," said Clef. "I haven't been able to keep up with all this crazy shit."
Then she heard a rattling sound in the street below. She poked her head back over the edge of the roof. An unmarked, black-scribed carriage was slowly trundling down the tiny mud pathway in the greens. Such rigs were about as frequent as a yellow striper here, and the sight of it made her uneasy. Now what? She watched with growing dread as the carriage approached. Anxious, she pulled off one glove with her teeth and touched a bare palm to the rooftop. It told her of rain, mold, and piles of bird shit, but nothing more. It seemed they were alone up here. The carriage finally stopped a few buildings down. The door opened, and a man climbed out. He was tall and thin, and not dressed ostentatiously. His posture was stooped, perhaps a man used to sitting to indoors work. It was hard to see his face in the shifting lights of the floating lanterns, but he had curly locks that looked somewhat reddish. And clean. Clean hair, clean skin, that gave it away. "He's Campo," she thought. Got to be. One of the soldiers ran up to the Campo man and started talking. The Campo man listened and nodded. And he's the man running the show, which meant he was probably the one who'd arranged the trap that had almost gotten her killed. She narrowed her eyes at him. Who are you, you son of a bitch? Which house do you work for? But she could glean nothing more about him. The Campo man gestured at a rookery building to the left of the clothier's warehouse, which Sanchia didn't like. But then he did something odd. He peered at the buildings around him, then reached into his pocket and took out something. Gold. She leaned forward slightly, straining to see. It looked like a round, golden device of some kind, like a big, awkward pocket watch, perhaps slightly larger than his hand. A tool made of gold, she thought. Like cloth? The Campo man examined the gold pocket watch and frowned. He kept looking at the tool, then up and around, and then back at the tool. Clef, can you see what that is? Asked Sanchia.
Too far away, said Clef. But it seems like...
She heard a shout, this one close, from the rookery to her left. Someone crying,
Stop, stop, you can't just come in here!
She looked up, just as the window shutters of one room banged open, about 3 floors above her, and a glowering man wearing a steel cap stuck his head out. The man spied Sanchia immediately, pointed and cried,
There! She's there! On the rooftop, sir!
Sanchia looked back at the Campo man in the street below. The Campo man looked at the guard in the rookery, and then at her. Then he held up the golden pocket watch, and appeared to hit a button on the side. And everything changed. The first thing Sanchia noticed was that all of the floating lanterns in the streets below abruptly went dark and fell to the ground. The other thing was that her mind went suddenly quiet. A sort of quiet she hadn't heard in a long, long time. Like when you live in the city for years and then spend a night out in the country and hear simply nothing at night.
Whoa, said Clef.
Gah, I don't feel so, so great.
Clef? Clef, we've been spotted. We've got to... He kept talking.
I feel like I had a stroke or something.
But though she was frantic, Sanchia couldn't help noticing that her abilities had changed. Her hand was still pressed to the rooftop, but now it told her nothing. Just silence. Then she heard the screaming. Gregor Dandolo strode through the alley in the greens, muttering,
Selvo building, Selvo building, as he went.
It was harder to find than he'd anticipated, since nothing in the commons was properly labeled. There were no street names nor signage of any kind. He needed to hurry. He had to get a hold of this Sark before the man heard he was looking for him. He stopped in his tracks when he heard the thump beside him. He looked down to see that Whip's dense metal head had just fallen off its shaft, and its metal cable was unspooling beside it.
What?
He said, confused. He hit Whip's lever to retract it. Nothing happened.
What the devil? He said.
In an abandoned loft in Old Ditch, the scrappers were carefully testing out a new scribed device, one that Giovanni hoped would be his masterpiece, a rig that, when attached to a scribed carriage, would give them remote control of the wheels, or it should, in theory. But it was persistently failing to work.
Something's wrong with the commands again, said Claudia, sighing.
What's not expressing correctly? Asked Giovanni. Where have we made the wrong step?
Then all the scribed lights in the loft blinked off. There was total silence. Even the hums from the fans were gone.
Said Giovanni. Did we do that?
People did not have many scribed devices in Foundryside and the Greens, and those who did kept them secret. But as some of the residents checked on their hidden treasures, they found something strange. Lights went out. Machines that had previously worked just up and died. Musical trinkets went silent. And a few of the larger scribings simply failed, some with disastrous results. like the Zawali Rookery in Foundryside. Though the residents didn't know it, the supports beneath the building that kept it upright were actually scribed with commands that convinced the wooden pieces they were dark stone, immune to the rotting effects of moisture and waste. But when those scribing stopped, the wooden beams remembered what they really were. The wood creaked, groaned, moaned, and then snapped. In an instant, the entire Zawali building collapsed, bringing all the roofs and all the floors down on its residents before they could even understand what was happening. Sanchia looked up when she heard the enormous crack from Foundryside and stared as a building collapsed. It was like watching a big stack of books slowly slump to the side and then tumble to pieces. Yet she knew that dozens and dozens of people had to be inside that structure. "Holy shit," she whispered.
"Ugh," said Clef drunkenly. Something's not right, Sanjazia."
She looked back at the Campo man. He looked surprised by the sound of the building's collapse, even nervous, and stowed the golden pocket watch away in his vest. A curiously guilty gesture. Sanchia looked at the dead lanterns lying in the street.
"I can't think,"
Clef muttered.
"Can't do anything."
Her bare hand was pressed into the rooftop, but the rooftop was still silent to her. A mad idea wriggled into her thoughts. "No," said Sanchia, horrified. "That can't be." Then a voice to her left.
"Scrumming little bastard!"
She looked up and saw the man in the rookery window lifting up in a springle. "Shit!" she cried. She sprang to her feet and started to run toward the building behind the warehouse.
"I thought it you. You weren't sure you could make that jump," said Clef.
"Shut up, Clef!" A bolt thudded into the rooftop just ahead of her. She screamed and covered her head as she ran. Not like that would stop the next shot, but in some calm, distant corner of her mind, she recognized that it had not been a scribed bolt. A scribed bolt likely would have punched right through the poorly built roof. Sanchia ran faster, faster. She took note of the stone shingles of the rooftop beyond, imagining how she'd land on them, how the soles of her boots would grip them. "I really goddamn hope," she thought, as she madly pumped her arms, "that I was right about it being 20 feet. She came to the corner and jumped. The alley soared beneath her, dark and yawning, passing ever so slowly like a cloud traversing the face of the sun. She'd pushed off with her left foot and stretched out with her right, pointing the arch of her foot at the edge of the distant rooftop, every tendon in her leg and hip and back extending to connect with that one spot, like a sprouting plant reaching toward a sunbeam. She lifted her arms as she leapt and pumped them back down, maximizing her propulsion. She lifted her left foot to join her right. She pulled her knees up. The edge of the roof flew closer to her. The man in the rookery screamed,
"No scrumming way!"
And then she compressed her legs as she landed, lessening the impact. She'd made it. Almost. For one splinter of a moment, she seemed to hang here, the edge of the roof biting into her feet, her ass dangling over the alley below. Then momentum, that oh-so-fickle friend of hers, carried her forward just a little until Sanchia found her equilibrium and stood up. Her body was still. She'd made it. A voice in the alley below shouted, "Shoot! Shoot her!" She started running as the bolts thudded into the wall below her, up from the alley. They must have surrounded the clothier's warehouse. She leapt forward and skidded along the slimy stone roof until she came to a small raised hatch leading down. The hatch was locked. She fumbled for Clef again, but screamed as a bolt slammed into the roof right beside her shoulder.
"She's over there!"
cried the man from the rookeries. She peeked over the hatch and saw him signaling to someone below as he reloaded, cranking his espringle once, twice.
"On the roof! On the other roof!"
She finally pulled Clef out and jammed him into the lock in the hatch.
"Now,"
said Clef.
Let me see here.
Another bolt came hurtling down, this one a handful of feet away. Right now, now would be just terrific, Clef, she said.
Huh? All right. There.
A sharp click. Sanchia wrenched the hatch open and leapt down the dark stairs to the floor below, flying from floor to floor. But she wasn't alone. Sanchia could hear footsteps below. She came to the second floor. She glimpsed someone running up the stairwell just below her. A woman's face, a dagger in her hand. She screamed, "Stop! Stop, you!" "Not a harpering chance," whispered Sanchia. She leapt herself through the door to the second floor, then slammed it shut behind her.
"Let me lock it," said Clef drunkenly.
Sanchia threw her shoulder against it as she ripped Clef off the string around her neck. She tried to slip him into the lock, but then, bang, someone on the other side hit the door hard, almost knocking Sanchia to the ground. She gritted her teeth, threw herself against the door again, and wriggled Clef into the lock. Click. Someone slammed into the door again, but this time, because it was locked, it didn't move. A voice on the other side moaned in surprise and pain. She ran down the hallway as people poked their heads out their doors. She took a left, kicked down one door, and ran into the room. The apartment was small and filthy. A young couple was lying on a pallet, quite nude, and Sanchia could not see much of the man's face, as most of it was obscured by the woman's thighs. Both of them screamed in abject terror as Sanchia darted inside. "Pardon," she said. She ran through the apartment, kicked open the wooden shutters, climbed up onto the window, and jumped across the alley to the next building. It was an aging structure, her favorite kind, as it offered plenty of good handholds and niches to stuff her toes into. She crawled down its side slowly and awkwardly, since she'd lost her ability to sense the walls at a touch, then leapt into the muddy alley below and started running north, away from the Anifesto Channel, away from the greens, away from the commons and the fisheries and the smell of rot and the hissing bolts. Screams echoed in the distance. Maybe another building had fallen down. Again, she thought about the dead lanterns, Clef's slurred words, and how all the world was dead to her touch. And again, the mad idea returned to her. But it was impossible, just impossible. No one could just turn scribings off. No one could just hit a switch or a button and make every rig in a whole neighborhood just stop. But though it might be impossible, thought Sanchia, so is a key that can open anything. She remembered the wink of gold as the man played with his contraption. What if he already had something like Clef? Something that could do something else. Smokestacks soared into the sky ahead of her like a cindery forest. The Michiel Campo foundries. She had a sachet, but most of the entryways would be closed and locked by now, since it was well after nightfall. Then she realized she had an easy solution. "I hope you're up to the task, Clef."
"What's that?"
said Clef. She ran along the smooth, white campo wall until she came to a large iron door, tall and thick and elaborately decorated with the Michiel logotipo. She took Clef out and was about to stuff him into the lock, when suddenly things changed. There was a scribed lantern just on the other side of the wall. She hadn't been able to see it before, because it had been dark. Yet it had just come back on, flickering to life.
"Ugh,"
said Clef, suddenly articulate.
"Whoa, I feel like I had a fever or something. What the hell was that?"
A whispering filled her mind. Sanchia looked at the iron door. She reached out with her bare hand and touched it. The whispering filled her mind, as did a thousand other things about the door. "Scriving's back on," she said out loud. "It's back." It seemed as if the effects of, well, of whatever the Campo man had done back there were fading. This was both good and bad. Good, because both she and Clef now had their abilities back. But also bad, because that meant the scribed lock in this door would now also be fully functional. And though she didn't know how long it'd take for Clef to pick it, she could tell from the calls and shouts behind her that she didn't have